Hello, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebar. I am Pastor Zach, and today we're going to be playing catch-up a little bit. We've had some technical difficulties over the last couple of days trying to get some things leveled out and taken care of, but we are going to do quite a bit of a series to catch everything up. Today we're going to be doing, we're going to be doing Genesis chapter 25, and then later this evening we're going to be doing Genesis chapter 26, and that'll put us back on schedule this coming Friday for Genesis chapter 27. So be a lot of them coming out this week for those that are listening. We'll be listening to the recording. Let you guys know that those will be coming out. And then for those of you who are listening live, you typically get a little, should be getting anyway, a little notification about when those live meetings are scheduled. So today we're going to look at Genesis chapter 25. And Genesis chapter 25 is kind of an enigma in some ways. Part of me kind of wanted to split this chapter up. But I want us to try to focus more on the studying aspect than just the application. I know here recently we've gotten a lot more application than just studying and what questions to ask, what words to consider, that kind of thing. So we're kind of teeter it back that way a little bit. The reason for wanting to split up Genesis chapter 25 is that we're dealing with a major shift in the biblical narrative. And what I mean by that is that we are killing off Abraham today. Abraham's going to die, and we're going to learn about his family and his descendants, and we're going to learn about Ishmael's descendants. But that, of course, is going to lead into what I mean by the major shift in the narrative of we're going to see the story of Isaac and, of course, his two sons, Jacob and Esau. And that's going to bring about a lot of things, because the story of Jacob and Esau is one that is very, very, very controversial in the Word of God. In fact, I really didn't realize, and I know I've probably said that a lot to you guys throughout Genesis, it's very controversial. There's a lot of things in Genesis that are, simply because it sets the foundations for the rest of the Bible. There's a lot of things that you would interpret and look at, and it really can change your perspective and your point of view on a lot of the Bible based off of what you're getting from Genesis. So when I say that, it's not a hot button, you know, clickbait kind of thing. It's truly that it's really that way. A lot of the book of Genesis is highly debated. And the biggest reason for that is because of the situation where we are, you know, before when we're going through this book, we're looking at God has this man, God has this man, God has this man, right? We have God has Adam, and we have Adam and Eve, and they kind of fail together in a way, right? We know that Adam, of course, committed the sin. Eve was deceived. We know these things. But there's not any situation where you're like, ooh, well, that just felt unfair. You were right there. You've agreed with the narrative, right? When Abraham was picked, you didn't go, well, why not Lot? You know, that never happened. You pretty much understood why not Lot. Okay, Lot's behavior was terrible. When you see the situation with Sarai and Hagar, you don't gravitate towards, well, you know, I feel like what they did was right. You know, there's nothing that really challenges you. Even Noah, when Noah was picked, you understood why Noah was picked, right? It says Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Noah's the only dude on earth that's doing the right thing. There hasn't been a point in the Bible where you've looked at something and gone, well, I don't really agree with how God handled that. Okay? And what I mean by that is that we haven't reached any point yet where we start to see God's divine wisdom play out. And not to say that God's divine wisdom hasn't played out since the beginning. It has. But what I mean by that is that there has to come a time where you have seen God's wisdom play out, where you start to question that wisdom, like people do with the story of Jacob and Esau. And the reason that people do this is because they feel like God chose Jacob, okay, and that basically condemned Esau to become who he was. You know, God already knew, God made him that way. And that's kind of what happens today, is we're going to get into this conversation of, you know, does God make people bad? Does God give some, put some people in a situation, in an environmental situation or personality flaw, whatever, that produces a desired result? And so there's a lot of things that get heavily challenged with this story, and a lot of accusations that get made against God as a result of how this story plays out. And I think the biggest problem with that is Charles Spurgeon actually kind of nailed this on the head, is that we have a perspective problem when we're looking at the story of Jacob and Esau. We're not looking at it objectively. We kind of look at it with emotion, and that has a lot to do with our lives. So let's go ahead and wrap up Abraham and the end of his life, kind of give you some of the application points that come with that. Let's get into the meat of this, which is Jacob and Esau. So starting in chapter 25, it says, "Then again Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah." Now, we're going to know from verse 6 that Keturah has actually been a concubine for quite some time. It's more than likely that she was even a concubine while Sarah was still alive. Okay, just kind of give you that tidbit. "And she bare him Zimran and Jokshan and Medan and Midian and Ishbak and Shua." And we know from these names, these are a lot of tribes that we actually run into when we start getting into Exodus and not Leviticus. Leviticus is the giving of the law, but Numbers and Deuteronomy. Okay. "And Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan, and the sons of Dedan were Ashurim and Letushim and Lumim. And the sons of Midian, Ephah, and Ephir, and Hanok, and Abida, and Eldaah, all these were the children of Keturah. And Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. But unto the sons of the concubines which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts, and sent them away from Isaac his son, while he yet lived eastward unto the east country. And these are the days of the years of Abraham's life which he lived, 115 years. Then Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, with the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre. The field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Heth, there was Abraham buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well Lahairoi. Now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names, according to their generations, the firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth, and Kedar, and Abdeel, and Mibsam. And Mishmah, and Duma, and Masa, Hadar, and Tema, Jeter, Naphish, and Kedemah. These are the sons of Ishmael. And these are their names, by their towns and by their castles, 12 princes according to their nations. And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he gave up the ghost and died, and was gathered unto his people. And they dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt, as thou goest toward Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren." So we wrap up the life of Abraham and Ishmael very quickly, okay? And there's, you know, we could get into, oh, you see, Abraham had these concubines, and these groups end up becoming problems later for the Israelites, and they do. A lot, Abraham's horrible decision to continue to have women, wives, whatever, even after the appointed one, leads to a lot of problems for Israel in the future, because every single kid he had received the blessing of a nation. And that happens with Ishmael as well. Ishmael has a bunch of nations that come after him. And when we get into the history of all these names and places, every single one of these tribes is accounted for. There are tribes that come from all of these kids. All of these kids have become nations at some point, which is what God promised to fulfill. Now, he didn't promise to bless, any of them but Isaac. And so Abraham, before he reaches the end of his life, he gives all of them a gift, an inheritance of sort, and he sends them away so that they are not near the promised child, which of course was Isaac, who would be his sole heir, who would receive the majority of his wealth. Okay, and I know we're kind of rushing this point, and eventually we're going to circle back and talk a little bit more in depth about some of the things that happen here. It's basically, here's this one, and they died. All right, Abraham lives for 175 years. Ishmael lives for 137. We know because Isaac and Ishmael come together to bury their father that there had to have been some reconciliation that occurred between the two of them. But we all know the story. Ishmael's descendants are going to fight with Israel. God had already said that that was going to happen. And to this day, they still are. The Ishmaelites and the Israelites are doing. You say, well, who are the Ishmaelites? A vast majority of them all of them, but a vast majority of Middle Eastern peoples, Arabs, are related to Ishmael. Some of them may have loose ties back to Abraham through these concubines, but the majority are Ishmael's descendants. And so all of these things come to pass. God just kind of wraps this up for you, and he tells you that Isaac is living near the well Lahai Roi. So he's kind of, he's still in the promised land. He's in a little bit closer to the southern area of that promised land. And this is where chapter 25 really picks up. We really start getting into things. Yeah, we have some genealogy and some history that we see in 25 with Abraham and Ishmael, but it's nothing that's going to be cataclysmic to the Bible just yet. There's things that are important that we needed to know, but they're not things that are going to really where I go, okay, now do you remember this kid? Okay, well, he had this kid, and that's where this tribe comes from, and that's why they're a problem for Israel, that kind of conversation, okay? And we open up in verse 19, it says, and these are the generations of Isaac. Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. So we're picking kind of up where we left off, right? End of chapter 24, these two are together. We find out Isaac is 40 years old when he finally marries Rebekah, okay? And he says that she was barren, and he entreated the Lord. It says, and Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So at 40 years old, he marries Rebekah, and we run into a problem because we realize that she is not able to produce children, that she is barren. And so he prays to God. God finally answers, and she conceives. It says, and the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. So there is this struggling that is going on within her, okay? And when she says, if it be so, why am I thus? She means, okay, God, why did you answer this? You answered our prayer that I'd be pregnant, but what's going on? Because at this point, we haven't had, not to say that it hadn't happened, but we haven't had in the biblical narrative a documentation of twins occurring before. Okay, so this has the potential to have been a fairly new thing, all right? And for her, at least, she did not know what was going on. And so she says, why am I this way, God? She's like, why would God answer the prayer just for, something bad to be going on in my womb? There's lots of things that are going on. Says that they struggled within her. And so she goes to pray and to ask God what's going on. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. She goes to God, and God answers her, and he gives her a very interesting thing in just this little bit. two nations are in your womb. Essentially, God is telling her, you have two sons. Okay, two nations are in your womb. That's what he means by what when God says that. And two manner of people, meaning that not behavior. That idea of manner of people indicates their personality, the kind of people they're going to be in the sense of their interests, okay? Many, many people get hooked up on, well, God knew from the time Esau was born he was going to be a bad guy and that Jacob was going to be a good guy. Well, that's actually not true when you look at both of these kids. When you look at both of them, both Jacob and Esau, really were not very good individuals. Jacob does not finally give in to God until many, 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 many years from now. Okay? So when we're talking about God's decision and who was going to receive the blessing, behavior and character had nothing to do with why God selected Jacob. Charles Spurgeon, I read this before I was studying because I when I look over this, I like to go look at what other men's opinions are, which is why I get into when I tell you this is highly controversial because, okay, I have gone and looked at other men's thoughts and ideas. Not only have I, you know, studied through the history, the culture, the words, all these things, but I go and look, and Charles Spurgeon made a very excellent point regarding this, because this is where the discussion starts. People go, oh, see, two manner of people. God knew Esau would be bad, Jacob would be good. That's not what that means. That means that their personalities, their lifestyle choices would be very different. And I know that you could argue and say, well, that has somewhat to do with their behavior. Yes and no. Esau being a hunter is not because he's going to be a wicked, sinful man. That doesn't mean that if you hunt, you're going to inherently be a sinner. Okay, that just means you have a different hobby, a different preference. Jacob was more of a homebody, okay, more of a homekeeper kind of person. Well, that doesn't make him inherently more sinful than others. That just means he doesn't like to be outside a whole lot, okay? That's what God means by this two manner of people. And this discussion starts here, and Charles Spurgeon made an excellent point regarding this, is that they said, I don't even know why I don't understand why God would hate Esau. And Charles Spurgeon said back to this woman that had questioned him and said, the question that I feel like you should be asking more is why would God love Jacob? Proving this point that what God says, there's two manner of people. It's not that God already knew, okay? He made his decision based on he knew who would do it. Yes, God is an omnipotent God, and he knows things about you, okay? And he knows the future, and he knows the results that you're going to choose. But God made this decision before these two were ever even born, and it didn't have anything to do with behavior. It had to do with who was going to obey God in the long run. Is God's wisdom, because Jacob is not a good guy by any means. Abraham was really not a good guy by any means. These men, though, in the long run, come around to serving God, and that's more what this is about. So he tells Rebecca, you're going to have two sons. They're going to be very different people. All right, they're going to have very different interests, very different ways of looking at things. And he goes on to say, and they shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people. One of your sons is going to be vastly stronger. However, and the elder shall serve the younger, which was completely against tradition. God says, not only is one going to be stronger than the other, but the younger is going to rule over the elder. Typically, in this day and time, the eldest son received the blessing. And God is saying, no, in this particular situation, I do not want the elder to receive the blessing. I want the younger. And now many people look at this and go, oh, okay, well, so you're saying that it wasn't the two-manner thing. It wasn't behavior or who they were. God made this decision. Well, it had to be because he knew Jacob would serve him in the long run, partly. But you also have to remember who God is. God does things men cannot fathom to achieve his work. Never throughout history would the younger son have received the blessing, yet God comes to Rebekah and says, the younger child is going to inherit the blessing that I gave to Abraham, who gave it to Isaac. He's going to be my chosen one for the path that my nation's going to go down. Guys, God didn't pick Jacob or Esau because of who they were going to be or their behavior, because he had predispositioned one to do this and one to do that. You are given a free will. God knows what you're going to do with it, but at the end of the day, your decisions are your decisions, okay? God picked Jacob because Jacob would not have made sense to men. God's wisdom does not work like men's does. If it was up to me and my children, and tradition said you did this, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to follow man-made traditions, because that is just the kind of people we are. Even to this day, there are many traditions in God's churches that don't make any sense, have any relevance, might have been useful back in the day, but are not relevant at all to today's time, such as a letter of membership that was intended for way back in the day when we came over into the United States, which, by the way, that's the other thing, is there's only a practice common in the United States during the time of Western expansion, that as people were going across, that was proof. They were given a letter from their church on the Eastern coast saying, they are indeed saved. They are indeed an upstanding member. And it was essentially a seal of approval that these people are who they said they are when they went to join a mission or a beginning to be established church in the West. That was the intended purpose. Today, though, that's still a very common practice. There are many times people come and say, oh, we're going to join by letter, which I think that the concept of join by letter has become extremely loose. I feel like churches do not take into account the full thought process behind what that means. And the reason for that is that I've been in churches before where so-and-so hadn't been in church in 15 years, but all of a sudden he goes to church and they say, yeah, we'll approve his letter. Well, what do you mean you'll approve his letter? You don't know if he's saved, not saved. He's been out of church for 15 years. You don't know if he's an upstanding member or not. And if we're going to be honest, if he hasn't been to the church that he says he's a member of for 15 years, is he really a good church member? Is that really somebody you want to recommend that another church accept? That's the concept behind it. But the reason that that's still practiced today is because it was a tradition that was never let go of. And so God looks at this and says, I know that this is the tradition of men, but I want this. And that's because God always does things where men cannot understand. They can't fathom it. God breaks men's traditions. God breaks men's intelligence. God does everything in his power to show humanity with everything he does just how little we really know. And that's the wisdom of God. Esau, as we're about to see, he didn't care about the birthright. Not even a little bit. In fact, here in this chapter, he's going to sell it for a bowl of soup. But Jacob desired it strongly, strongly enough that instead of letting God to work, he got greedy and tried to do his own thing to gain it for himself. And so God tells Rebekah all of this in just that short little bit of a statement. It said, and when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over, like an hairy garment, and they called his name Esau, which, of course, Esau, that name means red, and it also was a pun on the Hebrew word for hairy. Okay? The name described the child. He was red and hairy, Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob, which means supplanter or trickster. OK, Okay, let's think about this. You got one kid whose name means red hairy, and then the one who is going to be the chosen of God's name is Trickster, meaning he's deceitful, that he likes to try to do things underhanded, okay? And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. So it took 20 years, probably 19, since he was 60 when they were born. You got about 9 months for a gestational period. He was probably about 59 when she conceived. Okay, so 19 years before God allows her to conceive because they were married when he was 40. It says, and the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field. And Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. So Esau becomes kind of an outdoorsy type, basically. He's a cunning hunter, meaning he's very good at hunting. He likes to be outdoors. I would just say he's a country boy. All right, that might be the best way to describe it. I feel like me and Esau would have got along real good. I'd like to hunt and fish, okay? And obviously his lifestyle choices we wouldn't have been able to agree with, but on a hobby basis, we'd have gotten along fine. And so he likes to hunt, he likes to be outdoors, he is your macho man. All right, that's kind of who Esau is. He's your man's man, big beard, that kind of thing. But Jacob, he says he was plain, which has actually the idea of wholesome. Some people think, oh, he was wimpy, he was girly. That's not what that means. It means that he was well-rounded. Okay, he was more of a homebody. He had more of, you would almost say, a city boy type view. He wanted to manage things and run things. He didn't want to be out playing in the dirt. Okay, that was more the kind of guy that he was. Opposite of his brother. His brother is a rough country boy who would kill the deer out there in the field and cook the leg as he's butchering it. Jacob's more of a man of business and civilization type kind of thing. It says, and Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So Isaac, he and Rebekah make the number one mistake that parents today still make, which is to have favorites with their children. And that, I'm not going to lie to you. I understand that there may be personalities that you're drawn better to, but the idea of having a favorite child is a horrible, horrible, horrible idea that's never going to lead to anything good. It's always going to lead to nothing but problems in your home and, of course, amongst these kids. And Isaac absolutely loves Esau. And the reason that he loves Esau, though, is because of the kind of things Esau likes to do. Esau's a man's man. And he gets to eat of the deer that he brings back. Okay? And so he favors him because he's, you know, he's his tough older boy. All right? But Rebekah loves Jacob because he is the younger, the sweet one that stays at home and helps mom and helps dad, okay? Not really the butch macho man type individual. It says, and Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field and was faint. And so the day comes that Esau's coming back to the house. He's extremely tired. He's either been working, hunting, whatever. And Jacob is cooking pottage, cooking food, okay? Essentially a soup, whatever you want to imagine. If you want to imagine that it's actual pottage and it looks kind of like oatmeal, whatever, it doesn't matter. Point is, he's making food. Esau comes back, and he's very tired. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom. All right, and so he comes in and he says, give me some of what you're making. If I don't eat anything, I'm going to starve. Da, 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 da. Very dramatic, very whiny. Okay, and that the says, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom, talking about the fact that the desire for the red pottage. Okay. And so he comes in very dramatic. He's starving. He's got to have something to eat right now. Jacob is making his food. Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. Now, this shows exactly what I'm talking about. Because many people make this argument that, no, God chose Jacob because Jacob was going to be the good brother. No. Esau comes in, and he's got, we already know from future text, he's got no relationship with God, doesn't care about God. He's a very selfish individual, likes to do things his way. And in this particular instance, he's going to be willing to sell what he says is his birthright, which is the funny part we're about to talk about. Jacob is trying to, instead of being patient waiting on God, he's trying to underhandedly get the birthright. Now, what's funny about this is that Jacob is trying to buy something from Esau that God has already given him, and Esau is trying to sell something that was never his to begin with. That shows the foolishness of these two men. They are so caught up in the traditional approach of man that they too are missing the will of God. Rebecca and Isaac and Jacob and Esau, not a one of them had their eyes on God, nor were they concerned about what God had said would come to pass. And so Jacob says, you sell me your birthright, and then I'll give you some of this. So he's just as wicked, just as sinful, and just as unwilling to wait on God as Esau is. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point to die, and what profit shall this birthright do to me? Now, a lot of people misinterpret what happens here. For one, he's still being dramatic. Oh, if I don't eat something, I'm going to die. He is being a drama queen. That's completely 100% right. But when they talk about this, what will this birthright profit me? Everybody goes, oh, he took it for granted. That's not what it necessarily means. What it actually means is that Esau said, "What good?" The idea is, what good will it do me if I die? All right. He is so dramatic about how hungry he is that he's not playing the long game. He's playing the short game, which is something 99% of people do to this day. If I told you today, if you wait for a month, I'll give you $1,000. But if you have to have the money at any point in that month, I'll only give you $100. 9 out of 10 people are going to take that $100 immediately instead of waiting for the $1,000 at the end of the month. And that's what Esau's doing. Esau goes, well, I mean, I'm hungry now, and I die now. So what good's that birthright to me if I'm dead? Being overly dramatic, he'd rather have that $100 today than the $1,000 down the road. And so he says, essentially, okay, fine, I'll give it to you. And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he sware unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright, meaning that he didn't have enough appreciation for it. He didn't care enough. He was too selfish. He's too compulsive to wait for the long game. Now, of course, we always want to get into the application of this. What's the application? Well, first of all, with Abraham and Ishmael and all of their descendants, you need to always remember that your sin has consequences. Abraham, while he was a man of faith, I will not deny that. Obviously, the New Testament calls him that. He's in the Hall of Fame of Faith in Hebrews, all those things. He still had a major problem, as many of the men in the Bible do, with women. And his multiple relationships and wives lead to some harsh, harsh consequences down the road for the chosen nation of Israel, because they're going to have to deal with these people. So always remember that your sin has lasting consequences. Sin is not something that happens and there's an immediate effect. Sometimes all the time, when sin happens, sin's effect is a ripple, like going across a pond. I dropped one droplet of water on a pond surface, it ripples out and it spreads and it goes and it goes. That is how sin works. Sin has immediate, midterm, and long-term effects anytime that it occurs. Do not take sin in your life lightly. Secondly, be obedient to the wisdom of God. I know it can be very challenging to be patient and to trust and to believe that God knows everything. God's going to work it all out the right way. Because you and I, we never, never foresee God taking care of situations the way that we think God will. God will take care of a situation, but I promise you, it's never in the way that you thought he would take care of it or that you wanted him to. Be obedient to the wisdom of God. And finally, when it comes to your relationship and your walk with God and any decisions that you make in life, play the long game. Don't be the person that will give up a greater opportunity or a greater job opportunity or a greater life opportunity or a greater opportunity for God and serving his kingdom for what you can get today. It's always better to trust God and play the long game with him. Be obedient, be faithful, and trust in him. And so that has been Genesis chapter 25. Told you it wouldn't be too terribly long. We got to get everything caught up. Tonight, because we're trying to play catch up on everything. Tonight, it'll probably go live at about 9 o'clock-ish tonight, my time, Arkansas time. If you're somewhere else, I'm sorry. I do not know what all the time scale difference is. 9 o'clock my time. We will be getting into chapter 26 with Isaac and Abimelech and look over that story and what's going to go on there. And then Friday, we will be dealing with the blessing of Jacob by deception, the oh-so-famous story of Jacob and his mother's deception of Isaac when he's in his old age and blind, and the stealing of a birthright God was already going to give. I hope all of you have an excellent rest of the day. I will see you in just a few hours later this evening, and we will go through the story of Isaac and Abimelech. See you then.